Welcome to Lunchtime Classics on 90.5 FM WUOL. Broadcasting live from WUOL's performance studio on 4th Street in downtown Louisville. Now, here's your host, Alan Brandt.
Thank you. Thanks very much for being here. There's nothing like an unprompted audience. Welcome to our first in the new Lunchtime Classics series for 2006-2007. You can find our events and our schedule online at wuol.org. And it's once again my pleasure to welcome back for this season the Kentucky Opera. They'll be doing the series of introductory Lunchtime Classics. Also, you can call them Lunch and Listen. With their first production today, they'll be talking about Puccini's La Bohème. I'd like to let you know that Metro TV is providing coverage of today's program, and you can watch Lunchtime Classics on Metro TV on Sunday nights at 8 o'clock. Let's get started with an introduction to La Bohème, and I'd like to introduce the General Director, Philip Roth.
Sometimes they call me David, too. Thank you, Alan. And special thanks to our studio audience. It's a delight to see such a large crowd out here this afternoon. Some new faces and some old dear friends, too. So thank you for joining us, and thank you and welcome to our on-the-air audience as well. Thank you for joining us to begin this season, the 2006-2007 Brown-Forman Kentucky Opera season, and our new live broadcast of the Lunch and Listen, our new partnership program with WUOL and the Public Radio Partnership. Lunch and Listen is our opportunity to introduce audiences to each of our operas through performances and conversations with our guest artists that we brought for you today, the guest artists that we bring into Louisville for each of our productions. On October 13th and 15th, Kentucky Opera will open, as I said, the Brown-Forman 2006-2007 season with one of the world's most beloved operas, Giacomo Puccini's La Bohème. This opera is based on the novel Scenes from the Bohemian Life by Henri Murger. It is set in the Latin Quarter of Paris in the 1830s. Now, this time would be contemporary to the student uprisings in Paris depicted in Victor Hugo's novel Les Misérables, which, of course, we all now refer to as Les Mis. One more interesting little anecdote. Puccini, along with his librettist Giuseppe Giacoso and Luigi Illica, as they were working on this new composition, at that same time, another famous composer was working on an opera by the very same source. It is estimated, no one knows for sure, but it is speculated, I should say, that Puccini and this composer, Leon Cavallo, who we all know from Pagliacci fame, met at a cafe. They were good friends up to this point. At some point in the conversation, it was discovered that both of them were working on a composition from the same source, Murger's novel. And it is also said that by the end of the conversation, they were arch enemies and remained so the rest of their lives. Now, in Act One of Puccini's La Bohème, we meet the Bohemians, a poet, a painter, a musician, and a philosopher, a group of artists living together, or should we say sort of shacking up together, in this squalor of a top-story cold water flat on the West Bank in Paris. This is what we humbly call the garret. And one should remember that in this era, the top floors of apartments were not the most expensive part of the apartment building. Typically, you had five floors of stairs or five flights of stairs to walk up, no elevator to take you up there. And the view was less than desirable, filled with the smoke of all of the chimneys puffing out in a Parisian cold night. So most of the attics in all of these apartment buildings were where the artists hung out. In our first selection today, it's Christmas Eve, and the boys are celebrating the newfound wealth of Chouinard. Chouinard is the musician who had a bit of luck serenading the parrot of a doddering old Englishman when the boys are rudely interrupted by a knock on the door. Their elderly but not yet infirm landlord, the padrone, Padrone di Casa, is seeking, in a word, rent. It seems they haven't paid him in some time. A delightful game ensues to distract the old man away from the treasures that they wish to keep for themselves for the night's festivities. So if you would, please welcome to the microphones our guest artist to sing this first selection, Si Può.
Grazie,
tocchiamo
alla sua salute. A lei ne vengo perché il trimestre scorso mi promise
d'or mantengo.
Che fai?
Sei pazzo?
Ho visto or vi arresti un momento in nostra compagnia. Dica quant'anni ha, caro signor Benoit.
Gli anni, per carità,
su e giù la nostra età.
Di più, molto di più,
ha detto su e giù. L'altra sera
Alma Villa han colto in peccato la
mano.
Alma Villa l'altra sera l'han colto.
Neghi
un caso,
bella donna,
molto
Riccone,
Riccone,
seduttore,
Riccone,
Riccone,
una quercia, un cannone,
uomo d'un gusto,
il crin ricciuto e fulvo,
nei vongo lavarsi lo becco rudo.
Son vecchio, ma robusto,
lavarsuto e becco rio,
cede alla femminile virtù, timido in gioventù. Me ne ripago, si sa, è uno svago, qualche donnetta allegra, è un po', non dico una balena, un vagabondo, un viso tondo da luna piena, ma magra, proprio magra, no, poi no. Le donne magre son grattacapi e spesso sopraccapi e son piene di doglie, per esempio mia moglie.
Quest'uomo moglie sconce, moglie
d'onore,
morbae a testa la nostra valetta maggiore,
vuoi abbruzzi nello zucchero,
si disoccio il reprovo,
e la mora
di silenzio,
di silenzio,
che distaccia,
via il signore,
silenzio,
via il signore,
via i qua.
Signori.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. And before we go on, I would just like to introduce you to these singers today. Over here to my far left is Christopher Feigham, who is singing Marcello for this performance. Dorji Siren is our Rodolfo. Jeremy Kelly is our Chenard. Next over here is Andrew Gangstead, who is singing Colline, everybody's favorite bass. Yes. And on the piano for us today is Kristen Kahn, our repetiteur. So thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much. And I would also like to introduce you now to the rest of the cast before we go any further. We also have here Evelyn Pollock, who is singing our Musetta, everybody's favorite grisette. And we also have the other heroine, our prime heroine, our most beloved heroine, I think, in all of opera repertoire, Mimi, is being sung by Lauren Scous. So thank you all for coming. Oh, yes, and I forgot the old Benoit, the old landlord, Philip Cocorinos, who is also singing for us the role of Alcindoro coming up in Act Two. So thank you all. We have two people that I want to introduce to you, and I want to hear a little bit more from them later on in the program, but two dear friends who are back with us on this production. The first is Michael Cavanaugh, who was here, if some of you were around, for the production of Madame Butterfly, I think a year or two ago. Beautiful production. He directed that, staged it. And thank you. Yes. And a very dear friend of mine who is back for I'm not sure how many productions, but we're lucky to have him again. Maestro John Keenan is with us once again. Now, in our next piece from La Boheme, the boys, as you just heard, threw the old doddering landlord Benoit out of the apartment, and they are now departing themselves to seek new adventures out in the open air. Remember, it is Christmas Eve night. Why spend it upstairs in this stuffy old attic if you can be downstairs where all the parties and festivities are happening out on the street? Rodolfo has decided to remain behind in one last vain attempt to try to find a flame of inspiration. And he tries to write something before he hears a slight knock on the door. He's up alone in this dark garret. He hears this knock, and he hears a petite voice asking for some help. Rodolfo goes over to the door, opens it in the darkness, and there is this delightful woman standing with a candle that has gone out. It has extinguished her flame. It's a cold night, and as she begins to cross the threshold, he invites her in. She crosses the threshold, and she's not feeling well, and she faints, and she loses her key. It falls to the floor. There's a moment of silence, and he takes a little water. He refreshes her, and they begin to crawl around on the floor trying to find that key. And what Rodolfo really finds is a cold hand and a new muse for him, a new inspiration. Out of that moment, Puccini writes one of the most glorious tenor arias, Che gelli da menina. So I'd like to invite back again Dorji Siren to sing the beautiful Che gelli da menina, followed by Lauren Scous, who will sing Mimi's response to Rodolfo, Si mi chiamo Mimi, where she basically introduces herself to Rodolfo. So once again, I would like to invite Dorji Siren and Lauren Scous to the microphones.
Che gelida manina, se la lasci riscaldar, cercar che giova, al buio non si trova. Per fortuna è la notte di luna, e qui la luna l'abbiamo vicina.
aspetti, signorina, le dirò con due parole chi son, chi son. Chi son? Sono un poeta. Che cosa faccio? Scrivo e come vivo, vivo. In povertà mia lieta, scialo da gran signore. Rimedini d'amore per sogni e per chimere e per castelli aria.
Thank you. Thank you once again. That was Dorji Sirin, who was singing Rodolfo, and Lauren Skuse, who sang for us the beautiful aria from Mimi. Mimi, Chiamano, Mimi. Sorry, I keep mixing up that word a little bit, but I'll get there eventually. Thank you. You know, the brilliance of Puccini is that he can take two moments of, like, this intimate, intimate moment and make it real for us, not because the singer is singing for singing's sake, or because the singer can do the vocalese, but because he's attaching those emotions to the vocal line, to the music. And something as simple as the statement that Mimi has at the very end of that, that my flowers, I'm sorry to say, my poor flowers have no odor, which is why she is so inspired by the odor of the flowers growing by her window in the sunshine, which is the moment that Rodolfo connects with her and finds in her the muse that he has been waiting for so long. And this moment that should be rather grand and operatic becomes very intimate and personal, and we get to share in that. And that's the genius of Puccini's composition. So thank you for sharing that with us.
I just want to break in here to remind you that this is Lunchtime Classics on WOL. We are live in the performance studio here at 619 South 4th Street in downtown Louisville. Check WOL.org, and you can see what our schedule has coming up. Now, usually at the half-hour point, I interview one of the artists, and they're all very interesting looking and interesting sounding, beautiful people. But I would like to, since it's his first time as host of the Lunch and Listen for Kentucky Opera, I'd like to talk to David for a moment. Could you come over here, please?
Sure.
David Roth is relatively new to the Kentucky Opera. And when did you start, David?
I started in February of just last year. So February of 2006, really.
So you got to see the tail end of last year's
productions. Correct. The production of Little Women and the production of the Barber of Seville.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there any David Roth that we're going to see in this upcoming season, or was it already decided?
Well, because of the nature of the beast that we deal with in opera, opera singers scheduling things 2 to 3 years in advance, most of your production repertoire has to be picked, put on the schedule, and cast well in advance of the previous season. So I did have the gift given to me of this incredible cast. These productions that were picked this year, starting off with La Bohème, Lucia coming up in December, and then one of my favorites, as you all know, since I've said it enough, but Bizet's opera, The Pearl Fisher. And those particular productions and cast were chosen well before I came on board.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about this upcoming season? I mean, it's really nice to have the Pearl Fishers here, but La Bohème, it's going to be really popular.
As I said, it was an incredible gift to be given, a season of great grand opera, a season that is not difficult to market in any way, shape, or form. And it was also nice to be given these casts that my predecessor put together. So hopefully next year, I'll have a little bit more of myself in the productions coming up, which we'll be announcing just after the first of the year. Can't say anything yet, but some great news coming up.
Well, I do have to ask, I mean, what can you tell us about what David Roth is going to be doing with the Kentucky Opera?
Is this where you typically say no comments?
You could do that. You could be as vague as you like, but is there a David Roth direction for the Kentucky Opera?
Only in the sense that we are taking many of the things that have been given to us and many of the things that we have stabilized over the years, and we are taking those and building upon them, not just enhancing the value of our productions and the value of our subscription package, but adding program to it. So there are many, many exciting things that are coming out of fierce and intense negotiations over the last few months, but some great things have finally fallen into place. So all I can say right now is stay tuned for some great news coming up in the next few months.
Well, it's good to have someone with such passion for opera at the helm. And officially welcome.
Oh, thank you,
to the Louisville, and thanks. And I've talked enough. Let's hear some more great singing.
Absolutely. So I'm sure I'm back at a microphone that is live once again. And at this point, just before we get to our next number, I would like to take a moment to introduce you to our stage director, Michael Cavanaugh, and give him a moment to talk about this production. So, Michael, if you would join me at one of the microphones there, that would be great. Michael, can you just tell us a little bit about your thoughts about this opera, and in particular, how you approach something that is such a classic piece of standard opera repertoire?
Well, sure. That's a great challenge always, to do something that's so familiar. And my job, the way I see it, is to try to look at it with fresh eyes. I always say in situations like this, we're not keeping a museum when we run our operas, and certainly the people in charge of opera companies are not just there to blow the dust off of the tried and true, but to try to present things as though they were written the day before yesterday. And whenever I'm looking for surfing around for inspiration and trying to find what speaks to me about any given piece, I always go back to the source material. That never hurts. And in this case, these wonderful series of vignettes and episodes from Henri Murger's Scènes de la Vie de Bohème. In it, you'll find an awful lot more detail of about each of the characters. And what it tells us is that they are complete human beings. And they within their completion, I suppose, within the complete package, you have different aspects of the greatness of art. And they all represent a different way of approaching art, a different way of being conduits for art, a different way of expressing their art. And not just because one is a poet, another is a philosopher, a painter, a singer, but also the way they approach their craft, the craft of art, the profession, the hobby, the calling. And above all, the obligation, I suppose, to live life to the fullest. This is what we've been talking about in our rehearsal process a lot, is that these people don't just see it as a nice thing to do, to try to take a bite out of life and live life to the fullest and so on, but they see it as their job. They really do see it as their obligation, their responsibility to make the most out of their brief time on this earth. And to illustrate that best, we're given one character who loses her chance to live life to the fullest. And in loss, in the celebration of the loss of life, we can truly find the meaning for life. And that, I think, is the big thread that runs through everything in La Boheme, and it makes it great. It is a
sorry to interrupt for one second, but I find it interesting, and I had a conversation with another gentleman that I wasn't aware of this, but Puccini was really looking around for a new piece.
Absolutely.
After he had the great success of Manon Lescaut, and he actually wrote to his friend Ricordi at the time, the publisher, and said, well, he had a couple of options on his table, but none of them did he find the luminous character that he was looking for that inspired him.
Right. And it becomes about inspiration and about, you're talking about the Mimi character,
but also
I think every single one of these characters, from major to minor, not speaking in keys, that's John's job, but illustrates something about the artist that is Puccini. And we heard it right here with these wonderfully sung expressions, both arias. Each one of these characters is complete, and each one of them is literally singing with Puccini's voice. And that is why this piece is great, because Puccini completely understood the businessman that is represented by Chouinard, as well as the blocked-up artist who cannot find his inspiration. And, of course, with the celebration of life, this is not a comedy, except in part. So it's a tragedy in the sense, in the kind of strict dramatic sense, that it does not end well. Your audience knows that Mimi dies.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Sorry,
I'm not giving away too much
upset
of a
anybody.
State secret there.
That's right. You're not going to announce that after the new year. No.
You know, it's interesting that you said, talking about this inspiring character and getting back to one point that you said, and we talk about in theater about emotional arcs and the overall arc of the piece. And for me, it gets to the final scene when all of the friends are gathered there. And at that moment that she expires is the moment that you feel the inspiration that all of the characters on stage have been changed dramatically.
Sure.
By Mimi.
Well, absolutely. And can I tell you what the real tragedy is? Not that Mimi dies, because her death defines the meaning of life. In other words, without loss, there is no reason for living, right? If you do not lose your life, why live it to the fullest? The real tragedy is that Rodolfo's character especially has wasted the time and the life that they were given. It's not the loss of the life, it's the waste of the time you have that is the real tragedy of La Boheme and the greatness of it.
Well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next selection is literally a showstopper from Act Two of La Boheme. As the party, as I was talking to you earlier, the boys all left the garret. They go out into the street to celebrate Christmas Eve with the rest of the West Bank in Paris. And Rodolfo and Mimi eventually join them. And Act Two opens on the street in front of the infamous Café Momus. As the party is building on the street outside the café, a delicious laugh breaks through the din as Musetta makes her entrance. This is her aria, Quando Men Vo, or better known as Musetta's Waltz. Welcome to the stage, Evelyn Pollard.
Gente che dirà?
E da
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, too often we hear that aria, but we hear it out of context. And it's so wonderful to have the complete cast here to do the entire arc of that piece. What a delightful, delightful number. It's interesting, as I was sitting there listening to it, thinking about, you know, only Musetta could kill two birds with one stone, get rid of Alcindoro, reduce him to dust, and then break through the ice block of Marcello's heart. And she does it beautifully in one little aria. So thank you, and thank you all. Next up, I would like to invite Maestro John Keenan to the microphone and to talk just a little bit about this piece. John, we as audience members think of this opera too often as a series of great operas and emotional duets. But that doesn't quite begin to really define the brilliance of the composition. So maybe you would like to talk a little bit about it from the musical standpoint.
Well, Bohème is actually such a strong and great piece that it's sort of hard to describe and pinpoint, as if, you know, you were trying to describe your favorite painting or something similar. And Puccini was able to somehow get together the right mixture of passion and of touching moments, and he was also able to paint in the orchestra pictures and have colors that really had never been painted before. And in a way, he is sort of Italy's first impressionistic composer, although he wrote in a more clearer fashion than some of the French composers did. And he somehow was so moved by the story and the characters that out came this incredible, and quite quickly, incredible inspiration of melodies, and he was able to figure out a way to orchestrate the piece in a way that he makes the orchestra sound as beautiful as the lines for the voices. And that, I think, is one of the strongest facets of the piece.
Excellent, John. Thank you. What sort of inspires you about this piece?
Well, my relationship with this piece goes back to when I was a child. And I remember, it's very interesting because the first performance that I attended of this actually was the famous Pavarotti Scotto performance that was televised and now is actually available on DVD. So the first first performance I went to of this actually is memorialized on DVD. And they're calling it a historic performance, and you know you're getting old when you've been at a historic performance. And I remember as a child, I just fell in love with this piece. It was just the most amazing thing. I was obsessed with it and learned it. And I remember it's the first piano vocal score I ever bought as a child. And I just remember so many memorable performances of it. And I remember one of my first assignments at the Met as a young staff member was assisting a conductor named Carlos Kleiber, who came and did it. And he just changed the way everybody thought about the piece by going back to actually what Puccini had in his score, and which actually over the years had sort of been neglected. So,
is this the piece then that brought you to opera, would you say?
I would say it was this and La Traviata. My first two pieces that I saw as a child.
What are some of your favorite moments in the piece?
Wow. the Act 4 duet for the two men, for Rodolfo and Marcello, is so amazing. Act 2 is just an absolute joy to conduct. It's just nonstop, busy, exciting. I love so much of it. The opening of Act 3 is just atmosphere. It's incredible. You listen to the music and you can feel the desolate cold, the snowflakes. I'd say those are some of my favorites.
Excellent. Can you tell us just a little bit about our next piece, this quartet from Act 3, Dunque a proprio finito?
This is an incredible quartet because this has Puccini at his best, able to completely separate different feelings and different thoughts and different moods and different temperaments. You have here the two lovers, Rodolfo and Mimi, who know that they need to separate because their relationship is just not really working for the two of them, but they don't want to separate until it's warm in the winter because, as they say, in the winter, it's too cold. You need to stay together. And then you have the other couple, Marcello and Musetta, who have a completely different relationship. They are so fiery and have so many troubles and problems, but actually the two of them are sort of meant for each other. And he thinks she's flirting in the cabaret, and she says, I'm not. So you have the two of them yelling at each other and fighting, and then you have Rodolfo and Mimi, who are in turn trying to piece together their love and talk about how in love they are. And then you have Marcello and Musetta, of course, fighting.
So. Do you have any challenge as a conductor bringing what is, in a sense, two duets and two dramatically different duets, emotionally different duets, together into this quartet?
Absolutely, because the Mimi and Rodolfo music is quite slow and beautiful and languid, and the Marcello Musetta music is all fiery and very vibrant.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you very much. And now I would like to invite to the stage our cast to sing this quartet from Act 3 of La Bohème, Dunque proprio finita, not finito, as I said earlier. Thank you. Christopher Feigham is singing Marcello. Dorji Sirin is singing Rodolfo. Evelyn Pollock will sing Musetta. And Lauren Skuse will sing Mimi.
Dunque proprio finita, te ne vai la mia piccina. Addio, sogni d'amor.
Addio, dolce svegliare alla mattina.
Addio, sogni ante. Stagione dei fiori.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much. Before we begin to close this and give you our last delicious taste of this music, I want to remind you of our season this year. As I stated earlier, we open La Bohème, this very production, on October the 13th. That's a Friday. I'm sure we'll overlook that it is Friday the 13th. And we have our Sunday matinee on the 15th. On December 1st and December 3rd, we have our second production of the season, Donizetti's beloved opera, Lucia di Lammermoor. Can't wait for that one. As well as, again, my favorite opera. We close the season, Bizet's The Pearl Fishers, which is on February 2nd and February 4th, the matinee performance. The subscription campaign is still going, so we still have seats available for our subscribers. So if you haven't and you wish to participate as a subscriber and you wish to guarantee your seats for next year when we have some great, exciting news to forecast and open up for you in January, now is the time to, again, subscribe and guarantee your seats for next year. We also have single tickets available that are on sale as well for the entire season right now. So we welcome you all. If you haven't had a chance to participate as a subscriber, a single ticket holder, now would be a perfect year for it. And now would be a perfect year to bring your friends and family as well. What a great opportunity to see this cast and one of the world's most beloved operas, La Bohème. I would also like to thank, beyond all of you for joining us here in the studio and those hearing us live on the air, I want to thank our sponsors this year. And once again, our season sponsor is the Brown-Forman Corporation. We are delighted to have them back with us again, as well as our co-production sponsors are once again joining us this year. Co-production sponsors for this production of La Bohème are Greenbaum Dowell McDonald and Stockyards Bank. So we're, again, delighted to have them with us. And we also want to thank our annual supporters, the generous annual gifts we receive from our locally owned and operated, the Fund for the Arts, the Kentucky Arts Council, and Metro Louisville, as well as Delta Airlines, who is sponsoring us once again this year. So we thank all of our sponsors. And again, thank you for joining us. Now, to close our presentation today, we have chosen a piece that is very dear to most of us who know this opera, and certainly dear to my own heart. I would like to invite Andrew Gangstad and Jeremy Kelly back to the microphones, if you will, to sing for us a sentimental favorite from Act 4 of La Bohème, in which Colline and Chouinard leave the garret to give Rodolfo and Mimi a moment together, a moment of quiet. Colline decides to part with his dear old friend, his coat, hoping to raise money to help his sick friend, Mimi. This is Colline's aria, Vecchia Cimara. Gentlemen? Oh, sorry, we're only doing a small portion of it, thank you, which will just be the aria. Grazie ricevi, ma
filosofi e poeti. Ora che giorni lieti fuggir ti dico addio, fedele amico mio.
Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you. Just a couple of quick reminders. For those of you who would like additional information about Kentucky Opera, our season, our additional educational programming, or to buy tickets, you may call us at 502-584-4500. If you're out of the metro area, you can call us at 1-800-690-9236, or you can also reach us on the web, and our website is at www.kyopera.org. So any of those of you who would like additional information, please contact us. We'll be more than happy to share any information and sell you a few tickets as well. I want to once again thank our audience. I want to thank WUOL and the Public Radio Partnership for collaborating with us and partnering with us on this first Lunch and Listen program of the season and connecting it to their Lunchtime Classic. So thank you, Alan.
Thank you very much, David, and thanks everyone for listening live on WUOL 90.5 FM. Again, this is being recorded for telecast on Metro TV Channel 25. On Insight Channel 25, and this will be initially broadcast on Sunday night, 8 p.m., and that's October 8th. The production, of course, being on the 13th and the 15th. Our next televised program will be recorded in October 18th, featuring the Louisville Mandolin Orchestra, so something very different from today, but equally a lot of fun. Thanks for joining me. I'm Alan Brandt. We're going to go back to Carol. And thanks for joining us for Lunchtime Classics.
Yes.